This is Indie Book Publishing. Indie Book Publishing is a show about new books and the authors who wrote them. It's an opportunity for prospective readers to hear directly from the writers, to hear what inspired them to write and publish, and to hear all the inside details about their books. And now, Indie Book Publishing with your host, Steve Jorgensen.
The title of the book, The Magic Nickel, a fable about an unhappy salesman, a sad retired person, and an invisible monster. And the author is Tombo. And Tom joins us now on Indie Book Publishing, this interview brought to you by Inspiring Voices. Hello, Tom.
How are you doing, Steve?
Great to have you with us. A great story, a children's story, but at the same time, a lot of lessons here that adults can learn as they read to small children. Take a little bit different view of life. You've got a simple message here, but an important one. Let me read a couple things you've written. You say, I have a book that can challenge your idea of what makes you happy. And life can be rewarding if we share our gifts and talents with others. So in between those two statements lies really a basic message about life, huh?
Yes. It seems that when people are dealing with other people, they get caught up with the idea that they have to have things, they have to have the latest technology, whatever it is, and we find out they're not happy when they get that stuff. And I've had that experience in my teaching career that people would always be looking for something, and they get it, and then they're not happy. So the concept was here is that, you know, we get to be happy because we have gifts and talents, and we need to share those gifts and talents with other people, and then they share the gifts and talents with us, and that's what really makes us happy. The things that we get, the technology, the gifts, those are all just kind of little add-ons. It's really the people that we meet that make life really valuable and worthwhile.
Now, you mentioned you were a teacher. Tell us a little bit more about yourself, and then where'd this story idea come from?
Okay. I was originally an elementary school teacher back in Wisconsin, and I taught mostly fifth and sixth grade, and I taught that for 30 years in the same school district, and so I met lots of interesting students and a lot of interesting parents and certainly a lot of interesting teachers in that amount of time. And then later on, as I got a little older, then I got involved with retreat work, and that was mostly adults, and then later on I also did high school students. And then I did some church retreats. So all those kind of things got involved with writing the book.
So this message, a real simple and yet profound message about happiness, where did you come up with the idea of using this magic nickel, an invisible monster? We'll talk more about that. But how did this, where did you come up with this idea?
Well, I think first of it, all I was just thinking, you know, what kind of story would I like to write? And somehow Toy Story got involved in that, and it had just re-come out again. And so I thought, that's a good message. That's a good idea. So I kind of let that percolate for a while and added some of the concepts that I wanted to get in the story. The monster and the adults and the children all change because of the magic nickel. And in our lives, I think, you know, we all change from some kind of magic nickel. But mostly I think it's when we meet other people and they give us ideas on how they run their lives and what they do. And, you know, we look at that and we go, that's something I'd like to have. And that's our magic nickel that gets us inspired to change our lives and to become better people. So a lot of times when I was teaching, I'd watch the other teachers that I knew, and they were just really excellent. So I said, that's something I need to copy. So that became my magic nickel. And the monster was just kind of a fun little thing to put in there. And again, to change from one thing to another. And we do that because we meet people and we get involved with them.
So tell us about John, one of the main characters. We'll start with John.
Yeah, he's a businessman, and he's not happy with his life. He isn't challenged at work, and he doesn't really know the people at work. And so he's just not a happy person, and he's thinking something's got to be better, something's got to change. But he doesn't know what it is. And so out of desperation, he asked God for some help and some inspiration on how to make his life happy. And he's kind of based on some of the people I knew, too, aren't always the happiest people, and they make it more difficult than it has to be.
And then there's Bill.
Oh, yeah. Bill is based on a person when we would get together at the apartments that I was at. They would have a coffee hour, and there was a Bill there, and he was a cranky old man. And again, it was like, why aren't you enjoying life? You're retired. You don't have money problems. Your children are in good health. You have a lovely wife. Why aren't you happy? And so he became part of the inspiration for that character. And I tried to, what I did is every name in the book is someone that I knew, and so I try to take some aspect of their character and put it in the story.
So Bill and John, they've got a great idea.
Yes, they're going to sell toys to kids and make lots of money and be happy.
Sell toys to kids and make lots of money. So they end up with, what's this about, a card with an important nugget of wisdom printed on it. What's that about?
Well, one of the little children that's involved in the story at church had gotten a little card, and the card was a message saying, people are what's important in life. And so she gives that little card to grumpy old Bill. And at first he doesn't look at it, and later on he realizes that, yep, that has a good message to it.
So there's Alan and Mary Alice, too.
Right. They're the little children that are involved in the story, and Alan and both Mary Alice are a little on the poorer side, but they seem to have a good time. Alan is very trusting, and so is Mary Alice, and in the story, too, she, even though Bill is not very good to her, she treats him as a really wonderful person because he sells toys to kids, so he must be good. And so she gives him a cookie and just appreciates what he is. So that was one of the concepts I wanted to get across in the story, too, that adults can learn from children. And sometimes as adults, we get into trouble when we aren't as childlike as we should be, you know, trusting and wondering about things. So those two children help the two adults learn those valuable lessons.
Now, you do give a little bit of caution to folks. This book may cause you some uneasy feelings. And
then, oh, yeah. Well, you know, too often, it's a matter of, oh, I think this is what's right, and this is what's going to happen, and this is the way my life should be. And, you know, as you read the story, they find out that's not the case. And if we apply that to ourselves, it's like, why am I not happy? Or why am I having all this stress? What do I need to look at, and what do I need to do to change that? And one of the reasons I wanted to write the book the way I did is fables are meant to teach you lessons, but they also are nice lessons because you make the choice. If someone said to me, Tom, you need to change, you need to do this, you need to do that, I probably wouldn't accept that very well. But if I read it in a story and I see a character and I say, oh, that's really like me, and that character needs to change, well, then it's not so threatening for me. So that's the reason it's a fable form, and you know, hopefully people will see that and say, oh, there's areas in my life that could be a lot better, and they don't take a lot of effort to do that.
And often, as you point out, we feel like the world needs to change, but it's kind of overwhelming. What can I do? But there is a lot that we could do.
Oh, yeah. You know, I think as people, all we're really called to do is change our little corner of the world. And we can only do that with what we do. And, you know, too often we make that way too difficult. So I think we're called to be people that are nice people and giving and sharing, and then accept from others the same thing. That's not a difficult concept. Not easy, but it's not a difficult concept. And so that's kind of where I'd like people to go and say, well, these are areas in my life that could be a whole lot better, and they don't need a lot of effort to change them.
Very unique to this book. You have two different endings. I guess people can choose what they want to read or what they want to believe in.
Right. since I do a lot of work for service organizations, I'm very conscious of the fact that some people have very strong feelings about religion and philosophy and morals, and you have to be a little careful with that. And so some people that have more of a religious bent to it, that's one ending, and those people that really choose not to do that or don't have that feeling, then they have a different kind of an ending. So I want it to be comfortable for people, whichever ending they would like, and it also gives parents an option to say, well, this is the ending I'd like you to hear. And I also put some questions at the end of a story so that little kids could get involved in the story and say, well, who would I like to be? How would I like to get involved in this story?
And as most children's books are filled with great pictures, illustrations, very colorful, this has all of that.
Yeah, the department that did that, I think they did a wonderful job. Again, I've learned from the experience, and there'd be a few minor changes, but I think they capture the essence of the book very well. So I'm very pleased with the way they turned out.
So life is difficult at times, but it's not complicated. As you point out, we exist to share our gifts and talents with others.
Absolutely. I know too many people that are unhappy because they're not willing to see what's nice out there and to accept other people as they are. And it just causes all kinds of problems. And it's really pretty unnecessary. So, the more we can just be who we are and accept other people the way they are and enjoy that, that's pretty easy to do.
The Magic Nickel, and the author goes by Tombo, T-O-M-B-O. Tom, tell us how to get your book.
You can go to www.inspiringvoices.com. I do have a website which I'm learning how to use, and that's www.magicnickel.net. So those are two good ways to get the book.
Very good. Well, thank you so much for being with us on Indie Book Publishing.
Oh, I appreciate it. Thank you much.
And this interview has been brought to everyone by Inspiring Voices.
Listening to Indie Book Publishing, and we'll be right back after these messages. Get ready to live La Bella Vita with Dawn Catherine on Toginet.com. Live La Bella Vita. If you're wanting to know all the beauty tricks of the trade and the latest fashion trends before everyone else, this is your show. If you admire celebrities' beauty and their fashion sense, this is your show. Do you love wine and want to know more about the process it takes to make wine from the vine to the bottle? This is your show. Live La Bella Vita. For more on the show and your host, check out our website, labellavitacosmetico.com. This is the kind of show you can sink your teeth into. If you enjoy traveling and food and family, all with an Italian flair, then you can live La Bella Vita with your host, Dawn Catherine. Wednesday nights at midnight, 11 p.m. Central on Toginet.com. Mark Lipinski is coming to Toginet. It's Creative Mojo with Mark Lipinski, a live two-hour show Wednesday afternoon starting at 3, 2 Central on Toginet.com. Creative Mojo. It's fun, entertaining, informative, inspirational, and illuminating. Lipinski has worked on such shows as Oprah, The View, The Joan Rivers Show, and Ricky Lake. He's busy, but he's got the drive to share with Creative Mojo, dedicated to the modern crafter and crafting lifestyle. Dive into the info and enjoy everything from celebs to entertainment news to recipes, quilting and needlework, knitting, painting, woodworking, Christmas crafts, and so much more. This show boldly encourages you to discover and harness your own creative spirit by living creatively every day. For more on Mark and the show, check out marklipinski.com. Don't miss the fun. It's Creative Mojo with Mark Lipinski, Wednesday afternoon starting at 3, 2 Central on toginet.com. Welcome back to Indie Book Publishing, helping authors publish, promote, and sell their books around the world. Now, back to your host, Steve Jorgensen.
The title of the book, May I Have Your Attention, Please? Ministering to Those with ADD, ADHD in a Distracted World. And the author is Dr. Jason Whitehurst. And Jason joins us now on Indie Book Publishing. This interview brought to you by Crossbooks. Hello, Jason.
How are you doing today, sir?
Great to have you with us. Let me read a couple things you've written about your book, so everyone understands exactly what we're going to talk about. You say this: the topic of this book is something that has not been written about before, which makes it a rare and different project. The goal of the book is to help church leaders and Christian educators become aware and educated about ADD, ADHD, and as a result, to be more effective in ministering to those who come to their churches and suffer from ADD, ADHD. So this was quite a project, wasn't it?
Yes, sir. It was. It was a great undertaking. A lot of research went into it, and I was very pleased with the result. It actually was a part of my doctoral dissertation, and I never actually planned to publish it as a book, but upon the kind of the prompting of my mentor and reader at the completion of the dissertation and the defense of it, here we are several months later with this book. So,
well, you found out that there was a huge gap in the literature about this.
Absolutely, you know, there's a lot of material, articles, journals, books written on ADD and ADHD. There's a lot of books and journals and articles and blog posts written about, you know, churches and how to do church ministry and that sort of thing. But there was nothing in the middle. There was nothing to kind of bridge the gap between these two topics. And I wanted to write something that was different as a part of my doctoral research and dissertation. I wanted to do something that was different, something I had a passion for, something I was interested in. And so as I began to do research, I said, you know, there's nothing to bridge the gap. And so I want to contribute something that's going to help people. It's going to help pastors, church leaders, Christian educators, teachers, to be able to effectively communicate to those who listen to them, sit under them each week.
Well, and your desire to help pastors to communicate, counsel, and minister to those with this problem, and you've literally become an expert in the field because of all this focus.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, I think the first time I was called an expert on it was by, you know, in the defense of the dissertation from the mentor and reader. I never considered myself to be an expert. But, yeah, through the research and I guess, you know, like I said, the lack of literature and things being written on the subject kind of makes me, by default, I would say, an expert in the field.
Help us understand ADD and ADHD. Give us the bottom line.
Well, the bottom line is, I think for so many years, the term, you know, the acronym, ADD, and, you know, more recently, you know, ADHD, is just thrown around so much by people. You know, just if they say, yeah, I can't focus, or you know, I'm hyperactive, so I must be ADHD. That I think many people, just your average American, even the research I found, even medical doctors, an alarming percentage aren't really familiar themselves, because it's such a new disorder that we're studying. And so I think people just really don't understand that it really is a mental disorder that affects the way the brain functions and the way the people who are diagnosed with it, how they live, that it is a very real condition.
Now, is it new to our age because of technology or because of, I don't know, diet? I mean, what is causing this?
Well, I think obviously it's been around for years. You know, there's nothing new under the sun. I think there's just been, you know, as we progress in our scientifically and medically, we gain more knowledge. We begin to be able to label disorders and conditions even more. And I think what it is now is that, you know, this has been around, you know, for ages. But what it is now is that we can label it and identify it, and you know, the research being done, you know, what are the criteria for a diagnosis and things like that are newer. So this is newer in the sense of an actual title or an actual name for the disorder.
Now, your goal is to create an effective worship environment with those with ADD and ADHD. Now, that's chapter two. You talk about that. So give us a little insight for pastors and others to create this effective worship environment.
Yeah, you know, in church services and really just in any environment, this particular chapter is on, you know, the worship environment as it pertains to the church, but really any atmosphere, any place, any setting, you know, there are things you can do to create the environment, the atmosphere, and the setting that will eliminate distractions and enhance, in a sense, and the experience of the person who was diagnosed or has ADHD. And so the idea is to create an environment, to create an atmosphere and a setting in which they can be effectively ministered to and engaged and have a meaningful experience, whether it is, obviously, as we're talking about now, in a church service, in a sanctuary, or it's a classroom, or it's, you know, any place, you know, creating an environment where they can be engaged and receive, and so that's the goal. There is to set the tone, to set the environment, to engage multiple senses at one time.
Now, also, you talk about effective ways to preach to those with this problem.
Absolutely, you know, and it goes back to communication and engaging. You know, there's several things that I talk about, several different methods of preaching or teaching that really lend themselves to communicating. And that should be the ultimate goal, you know, as a pastor, as a teacher, as a Christian educator. You know, we have a message that we want to convey. We have, you know, something we're trying to deposit and get the audience to remember and digest. And so there are several different methods of preaching or teaching that lend themselves to helping those with ADHD retain information. And so that's the goal there, is to use these methods to really make sure that they're getting what you're saying, and they're absorbing it, acknowledging it, processing it, and just really locked in and focused.
And the same could be said for those situations, one-on-one situations, counseling situations.
Yeah, you know, it does. As ministers and Christians in general, you know, we encounter those in our congregations, church members and visitors who suffer from ADHD. And if you have the understanding and the knowledge and the mindset of what that person is dealing with and how they think and how they operate and how the disorder may affect their level of engagement, then we can have a better conversation and be more effective in our counseling times, whether it's dealing with whatever issues they may be dealing with. This is not, you know, obviously a licensed professional counseling type of counseling. It's more of a pastoral, ministerial type of counseling where someone comes to you and they're dealing with an everyday issue, and you're counseling with them. If you understand ADD and ADHD and how it affects that person, then the way that you word things and the way that you keep their attention so that they retain and receive what you're explaining to them and talking with them about, it just changes the whole dynamic of what you're doing there.
Now, this first edition has given you a vision of another edition already.
Absolutely. You know, correspondence through messages and emails and all kinds of other communication methods have come in since the book has come out. And I don't even know how everyone has found out, because I haven't actually really begun to enter into the publicity aspect of the book. But a lot of correspondence and feedback from parents of children with ADHD and a lot of spouses of people who are diagnosed with ADHD. And there's a sense of frustration. There's a sense of, you know, what can I do? Will this book help me, you know, with my child, with my spouse? And so my goal is now, and I've begun kind of doing research on methods and principles and things that will help parents and spouses, those with loved ones, be able to, number one, be less frustrated, but have these practical, applicable ways of effectively engaging their children or their spouse and understanding what they go through on a daily basis. And so that's the next project.
Well, this first edition for ministers, it broken down into two parts. This first part, you talk about the medical data, diagnosis, symptoms, statistics, et cetera, about ADD and ADHD. And, of course, the second part is this practical ministry resulting from an understanding of the material presented in the first part of the book. So you're covering all the bases here, and really it's what you call, it's a guide, more of a guide manual kind of a book.
Yeah, that was really my goal, was to have what you say, a guide or a manual, that, you know, basically establish what is, you know, raise the awareness and understanding at the beginning, okay, what is ADD or ADHD, and raise that understanding level. And then from there, okay, now that you understand what it is, what the symptoms are, the statistics, the myths and misconceptions, once you understand that, okay, let's take that and apply it into ministry and into church work and into teaching. And so it goes from a level of kind of the platform, basically, of understanding, and taking that platform of understanding what it is, okay, how can we use that knowledge to apply it to better engage and effectively communicate with those in our churches.
And also to even help training volunteers.
Absolutely, because, you know, in every church, there, you know, we're a volunteer, you know, we have paid staff, but obviously we have volunteers, and they teach Sunday school, and they lead groups, and they, you know, do so many different things. So it's very important that they know as well. They understand what the condition is and how it affects people. And so that, you know, if you have, let's just say, for instance, someone's working in the children's area of a church, or, and, you know, they get frustrated because a child is maybe really, really active. Now, we know children are active and they have a lot of energy, but this particular child may be hyperactive or inattentive to the point to an extreme. Well, as a children's worker, if you have, if you do not have the knowledge or even know what ADHD is or know that the child is diagnosed with that, then you can really be really, really, really frustrated and discouraged and even get possibly burned out. But if you're trained and you understand what it is and how you as a volunteer in that area can engage that child more effectively, you're going to see better fruit come from that ministry. You're going to see, you know, better results, and you're going to be less frustrated because you have an understanding. It's all about understanding what it is.
We've been listening to Dr. Jason Whitehurst. He is the author of his book, May I Have Your Attention, Please? Ministering to Those with ADD, ADHD in a Distracted World. Jason, tell us how to get your book.
Well, it's available. It just went live in the middle of December, and because of the holidays and everything, I, you know, have not done, just now beginning the publicity part. So, but right now it's available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble and just all the places, your favorite retailers online, however you like to read, and what, you know, whether it's hard cover, soft cover, Kindle, the Nook edition, all those editions are available online. You can go to Amazon, Barnes & Noble, et cetera, and get a copy of it.
Well, thank you so much, Jason, for being with us on Indie Book Publishing.
Thank you so much, and God bless you, man.
And this interview has been brought to everyone by Crossbooks.
you're listening to Indie Book Publishing, and we'll be right back after these messages. Get ready to laugh along with This Little Parent Stayed Home with Ali Loprete. Friday evenings at 6, 5 Central on TogiNet.com. This is a truly realistic, no-nonsense, tell-it-like-it-is method that will have you laughing and crying, surviving while struggling, and hammering away at the hardships as you travel through the greatest journey of your life. Get empowered by joining thousands of other parents who have also decided to take a leap of faith into a double career with longer hours and half the pay simply because of the love they have for their children. Together, we are rebuilding a new economy that will support us rather than enslave us. Never again will we have to choose between raising our children and earning to provide for them. It won't be easy, but it will be worth it. For more on Allie and her success, check out her website, OurMilkMoney.com. So come get empowered with This Little Parent Stayed Home with Allie Loprete, Friday afternoons at 6, 5 Central on TogiNet.com.
People think I've made it. I'm popular. I seem happy all the time. I have great clothes and I'm involved in everything. But I have questions, doubts, and fears, just like every other teenager. That's why I'm glad for Teen Talk Radio, where it's all about choices.
Join us for Teen Talk Radio with Nicole Odell, Thursday nights at 10, 9 Central on TogiNet.com.
The choices we have to make that can alter the course of our lives. Life is too much pressure if we try to go it alone. I tune in to Teen Talk Radio with Nicole Odell every week to get reminded that I'm not alone. Nicole Odell is an expert on what happens in the lives of teenagers. Join her as she deals with topics like peer pressure, purity, drugs, alcohol, and many other things that might come up along the way. She writes books and speaks to people all over the place, but she says her favorite moments are when she can pull up a chair and chat with teens about what's important to us.
For more information on Nicole and her books, go to NicoleOdell.com. Then join us for Teen Talk Radio with Nicole Odell, Thursday nights at 10, 9 Central on TogiNet.com.
Teen Talk Radio, where it's all about choices.
Welcome back to Indie Book Publishing, helping authors publish, promote, and sell their books around the world. Now, back to your host, Steve Jorgensen.
The title of the book, A Look Behind the Walls. And the author is Connie Alexander, and Connie joins us now on Indie Book Publishing. This interview brought to you by Inspiring Voices. Hello, Connie.
Hello, how are you?
Well, you're going to take us behind the walls, which prison walls, but also with a lot of help and a lot of hope for these incarcerated men and women, mostly men, I guess you're dealing with. But let me read what you've written about your book. You say this: A Look Behind the Walls gives insight into the world of incarceration and its effect on the spouses and families of the incarcerated. It also explores the realities of the institutional mind and its effect on reentry. The main point of this book is that a personal relationship with Christ offers the hope that is needed to change one's lifestyle from darkness and walk into the light. Well, that is a lot of hope.
Yeah.
And you're proving that it works. And first of all, Connie, kind of, you know, tell us about yourself and your husband, Clayton Alexander. You folks have founded a really interesting halfway house. Take us back on how you did that and then why you wrote the book.
Okay. Clayton and I became involved in prison ministry about 18 years ago. We on a spiritual retreat weekend walked to Emmaus, and we both were very impacted by that. And a kairos is held in prison, and it basically is a short course in Christianity. And Clayton had been going to the Lionel prison because that was around his hometown and where he had grown up. And he had been watching men who had accepted Christ, and they came out, and he watched their struggles as they tried to start their life over. He watched the trouble that they had finding a place to live. He watched the problems that they had trying to find a job as a felon. And he just became very concerned about that. And so we decided that basically he asked me one day about starting a halfway house. He said, how would you feel about that? And I told him that if he felt like the Lord was impressing him to do that, he should do it. In fact, I joked. I joked with him that don't think he was going to, you know, die and go to heaven and tell the Lord, when the Lord asked him, why didn't you do that? Why didn't you start that halfway house? That he would say, well, I wanted to, but Connie didn't let me. So that wasn't going to cut it. we started out, and our vision was to start small and to help old two or three men to rent an apartment to them and just help them get started. And that was not met very well within the town, and I can kind of understand why. But there was a lot of concern that caused some problems that way. So we ended up moving it out to the county, and we bought this piece of property, and we redid it and everything, and that is a itself. It's hilarious. But basically right now, Stepping Stone Ministry has come out of that, and it houses about 40 men who are exiting prison, who have been applied, and they have been accepted by our board of directors. And basically, they have told us that they want a new lifestyle, that they are a new creation in Christ, and that they're serious about starting over. And so that's kind of how it came about.
Well, this whole notion, which we don't think about very often as just regular folks, but when prisoners are released back into society, especially back into their community where people know them, that's kind of a scary thing, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And most people don't realize that 90% of the men who are in prison, 90% are going to be released someday. And when they are released, they 70% are released back to their place where they were arrested, which usually is their home county. And so they're coming back. And to me, what I am passionate about is how are they coming back?
Mm-hmm.
How are they coming back? Are they coming back a better criminal, more hardened? Are they coming back angry and bitter because of the way they were treated inside? And don't get me wrong, I don't believe that, you know, we ought to throw open the doors and let everybody out. I don't. But I do believe that we need to be using programs that are proven. The Kairos program that I talked about is a proven program. Now, that's not, let me say this. It's a proven program in that the regular recidivism rate is 50%
meaning,
of the men who are released.
Meaning
50% are back in prison within 3 years.
Yeah. Wow, 50%.
50%.
So that just shows you the lack of rehabilitation in prison.
Yes.
And also what the neighbors and the family feel.
Oh, you know, that's the one thing. As we were working and starting on this, I also became involved in a federal grant. And the federal grant was through the Fatherhood Program. And so we thought we were going to do a fatherhood program, going in and presenting the fatherhood course to the men. And chaplains were all for that. They were so excited. But as it turned out, this particular grant was it was to take in marriage seminars into the prisons because they have an 85% divorce rate of when couples have stayed together all through prison, and we think they've gone through the toughest times. Well, 85% of those men are divorced within the first year. And there's some real interesting reasons found out.
Right. While the person's in prison, that is not going to be the toughest time. Is when they get back and have to deal with
issues
in the home, right? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, and how the wife and the husband deal with those issues.
Well, that's right. The thing that really got me, I'll tell you, when we first started doing the marriage seminar, like I said, it took us over a year to get in. because the chaplains were like, no, you're not bringing women and wives into this prison and letting them sit next to their husband. And no, huh? Mm. So it took us a year to get in. After we had a new chaplain show up, and he said, well, you're just approaching this wrong. That's what he told our educational director, Ron Brewer. He said, you've got to approach this from the standpoint that the chaplains can fulfill all their family requirements on a weekend. And then you've got to stress safety. So it ended up, we did get in. We got approved to do one marriage seminar inside. And it was very interesting. And, you know, that gave me a different glimpse of things. It made me look at things a whole lot different, because the ladies that showed up, we sent out papers that told them that we were going to do a marriage seminar, and their husbands had applied for them. They had to fill out all this information because they did background checks on everybody. And seeing those ladies' names on a piece of paper just didn't mean a whole lot. But you know what? When you met them face to face and you found out that these were ladies from all different walks of life, you know, there were professionals, there were church secretaries. But the one thing we found is that they didn't share very often about where their husband was or what he did. In fact, one of the ladies had a great sense of humor, and she said, oh, when people ask where my husband is, I simply tell them, well, he works for the state. And everybody got a great big kick out of it. Yeah. He works for the state.
And
I'll add underneath my breath, he doesn't get paid much.
And according to your figures, the state spends $18,000 a year per inmate in Texas.
That's correct. They spend that much just to house them.
Right,
just to house them and feed them.
That's how
much it costs.
Yeah.
No. But that doesn't even touch anywhere near the real expense, the real cost, because we end up supporting most of those families that are left in poverty.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah,
we really do.
Yeah, welfare steps in, doesn't it?
It sure does, and it has to, because,
right,
you know, it almost takes today, in today's society, it almost takes two people making working jobs to make a living and provide for your kids and everything.
Let me ask this question. You say you've had the most success with sex offenders. Now, how do you evaluate
that's
that?
That's been really a shocker. It has. That sounds strange.
Yes.
But when you go back and you realize that of the men who are in prison, they estimate that somewhere between 90 and 95% were either on drugs or alcohol when they committed their offense. And when you consider that, they have some kind of problem to have landed there in prison. So what we have found is the men who are sex offenders, and don't get me wrong, man, what they've done is awful. It's terrible.
Sure.
But our whole thing is based on, do we really believe that Jesus Christ can make a new creation? And at Stepping Stone, that's
mm-hmm.
the whole thing.
Right.
And what we found is that the ones that are sex offenders are not so likely to reoffend as the ones who are hooked on alcohol or drugs. They may have been off of it, off of whatever they were addicted to for years. But when they get out, when they get a little money and things start going well, they start believing that old lie about, well, you know, just one won't hurt.
Yeah,
I'll just one
exactly.
drink or one
yeah.
hit, and then pretty soon they're back. They're what we call twisting off.
Okay, Connie, we just have a few minutes left interview. I want you to just in like a minute tell us about how your book will help the incarcerated, the person who, this institutionalized mind, as you put it? How, first of all, how it will help him or her, and then how it will help the family? So let's start with the incarcerated. How will your book help them?
The incarcerated, I hope that it will give them hope that there is a way that they can change their life. There is. And that the only way really for that, the only way to make a lasting change where you find purpose for your life is through Christ. If you are trying to do it on your own, it's probably not going to work. That just sounds terrible, but, you know, the
well, it's
programs
reality,
that are
right?
out
it's,
there.
It's reality.
It is. That's the key. Society may not want to believe that or admit it, but that's the key. You have to have Christ in your life in order for that change to become reality. And it just doesn't happen without him.
And then how will your book help the family that's been alone, no father there for a long time? How will your book help the family, the spouse, even the children?
I believe that this book can offer them the hope of seeing other people who have made it through the incarceration. But I also think that it gives them reality of there are things that they can look for that will help them to avoid the problems that can just blow up all of a sudden. After he comes home and she has been the person who has been in charge, she has been the person, if she dumps too much on him right away, it can become a problem because of the fact that he has not been allowed to make choices for years. And she has made all the choices, and she has grown as a person. And he, on the other hand, has not been allowed to develop those skills. And if he comes home and she thrusts too much upon him, whereas if they can sit down and work through things like a budget and let him see what's been going on and where the money has been going and why there has not been enough money to go into his account while he was locked up, he gets to see where it's spent. If they will sit down and approach those things together. Another problem that might lie in the wings is if, while he's been inside, there's been three things that have been major, and that is he has become very good, usually, at manipulation, at self-centeredness, and at intimidation. And, you know, you take those three attributes and put them into a marriage, and it's ready to explode.
Mm-hmm.
So,
but he's had to deal with the
give her an awareness of it.
Yeah, he's had to deal with the reality of prison life. So he's had
right.
a self-survival,
right.
survival in prison. Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
And he has to have those
yeah.
those attributes, or he would not succeed.
Yeah, they won't fit in a family, that's for sure. No,
and
no.
that's right. Yeah. It'll just destroy a marriage.
Well, Connie, we appreciate you so much sharing about your book, A Look Behind the Walls. Connie Alexander, she is the author, and her husband, Clayton Alexander, the founder and executive director of Stepping Stone Ministry. They're out in Midland, Texas. Connie, tell us how to get your book.
You can get it off of Amazon.com. You can get it through Inspiring Voices, through their bookstore. I've heard it's at Barnes & Noble's, and I have a website, and it is simply alookbehindthewalls.com, and you can get it there. It's a quick read, very short book, okay, and pretty inexpensive.
Thank you so much for being with us on Indie Book Publishing.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
And this interview has been brought to everyone by Inspiring Voices.
You've been listening to Indie Book Publishing with your host, Steve Jorgensen. Join us again next week at noon Eastern as Steve interviews another great author.